This is Red Eyes Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Nice to have you with us. If you are listening for the first time, a warm welcome. My name is Henrik. RedEyesCreations.com is our website where we have frequently updated news, our radio archive, videos, films, links, resources, and much more. We are based out of Sweden, Scandinavia. We discuss and highlight everything from conspiracy and spirituality to the occult, the esoteric, new technology and science, philosophy, history, secret societies, geopolitics, religion, and so much more. We are here doing radio on Thursdays and Sundays with interesting guests, interviews, and information for your consideration. We do not tell you what to think or what you should believe, and we try to present the information in the best way we can and help to highlight the research of authors, filmmakers, other researchers, and bring their information to your attention. And we think that you should ultimately make up your own mind about the subjects we cover. Always question the information and, of course, continue the search for yourself if you find it interesting. I also want to remind you that on Sunday, the 28th of September at 7 p.m. GMT, we are starting up Red Eyes Live. That's audio and video feeds from our studio. More like TV than radio. This is interviews with clips, film excerpts, images, video, photos, graphs, or whatever other kind of visual aid we can use that will help us to go even deeper into many of the subjects that we cover and to better present the some of the information and explain some of the material for you. Our first guest will be Daniel Tatman, and we're going to go further into architecture and symbolism as we continue our miniseries. And also backtrack a little bit to show you visually some of the things that we have been talking about with Daniel. And this is going to be really awesome, and I want you to tune in live. This is a whole new level to Red Eyes. So simply go to redeyescreations.com and click on Red Eyes Live, the banner. And from there you'll be able to see the player and get more information about the time and also about the time zones, of course, in case you're tuning in either from America, Australia, Africa, or Asia. So again, Sunday, September the 28th at 7 p.m. GMT. Don't miss it. And today we are going to get into the Zen Eye of the Hurricane with Christopher Morse. As you know, if you're a regular listener, Chris has been with us many times. He's a frequent guest that we always like to check in on now and then and get an update from creativecosmos.org. That's Christopher's website, creativecosmos.org. Chris is an author, a writer, and a spiritual explorer, and interested in many different spiritual paths. I'd recommend you head over to his website, creativecosmos.org, take a good look around for articles, music, and of course art, and many of his interviews that he's done before. So with that, let's say welcome. Thanks for coming on again, Chris. Wonderful having you back on the program again.
Hi, Henrik. Yeah, I'm glad to be back, and I'm sending out a hearty handshake across the Atlantic to you on this day. And as I was telling you, even as we were getting ready for the show, the muse is upon me. I can feel the flow happening, and I love how the just having a listening audience out there initiates the flow of information and will take us to places that we can only imagine over the next hour or however long we're going to be talking today.
Sounds good, Chris. Thank you very much for coming on. It's a pleasure having you back. You know, how are you been? How are things over at creativecosmos.org?
Oh, things are good. You know, things are moving and changing and flowing. And, you know, myself, I'm still always looking for new ways to express myself as part of my joy or part of my meditative practice. You know, one thing I've been doing lately that's kind of interesting is I've been doing some wood carvings. Yeah, I might even throw a few pictures of those up on the site over the, well, maybe probably tomorrow or tonight or something, because those are kind of cool. You know, just another way to get some of the expression out. You know, that's really one thing I wanted to talk about today is how the creative cosmos, well, how it came about in the first place. And one of the core things that I believe it facilitates is, you know, in the expressing of yourself, you can dig into your subconscious. You know, that's part of it. Like if you draw 100 pictures and you look at that, you'll learn a lot about yourself. And not only that, but having expressed that, you'll loosen these things up. They'll come in front of your vision, and then you'll be able to deal with them and be done with them, free that energy up. And then the next cycle of energy coming through will be that much more inspired and that much more invigorated. And then we do this with music, and we do this with art, and any possible way we can think of it, we express ourselves and get those juices flowing and get the energy coursing through us, and then we're on our way to building some awareness in the moment.
That sounds like a very good idea, actually. So you're basically, what you're saying is that through art, different kinds of expression, you can in a way process some of the stuff you're dealing with, right? Some of the knots and tanglements of your psyche, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's one really good way to just and you dig in there, you know. I mean, I'd say the first thing is, as soon as you acknowledge to your subconscious that you're ready to look in there, things will start bubbling up to the surface, you know. But what happens is a lot of people get frozen. They don't do anything. They don't recognize it. They don't look there. They just kind of put it off to the side, and okay, now I'm dealing with the world. I'm doing stuff. I'm involved in this out here and this out there, and this is stressing me out, and I'm thinking about this, and how am I going to pay the bills, and what's all this crazy business on the TV, and is the end of the world going to come? Well, the internet seems to think it is, or some people seem to enjoy it. But well, we love the craziness out there as well. It takes all types of people to make a world, that's for sure. But yeah, you know, when you start creating, and it isn't a thing of whether you know, you think you're an artist or you think you're a musician, you know, it isn't about that. It's making that effort. You know, anybody can take out a pad of paper and begin writing about how they feel. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be for anybody else. It can be just for yourself.
Yes.
But, you know, as you're digging through some of this stuff and you start getting some of it out there, well, you'll also start finding light rays. You'll start finding, you know, your inner sunshine, and you'll be amazed at what comes out when the energy takes over and expresses itself. You know, that was one thing I wanted to kind of get into today, is one of the Zen ideas of being the hollow bamboo, and what that means and how that feels and what it brings into your life.
So let's dive into that right away, Chris. Tell us more about the hollow bamboo.
Okay. Well, you know, I came across the concept kind of you know, from the musical angle initially, and I was as you know by now, most people, that I am a trumpet player and musician. I went through 9 years of college, you know, all sorts of training even before that, since I was a kid, on you know, with really great teachers on how to play the trumpet, and I got very far along in an academic sense and in a technical sense, but at some point I hit a wall, because it was all cerebral. It was all like kind of replication, or, you know, I hadn't touched into the greater music yet. I was still, I don't know, I guess you could say immature in a sense. And then in my own personal search, I had to kind of get out of music almost for a couple years, or at least, you know, I never was out, but I had to kind of get out of that frame of mind and allow myself to do different kinds of expressions. Now, this was something I felt coming to me just before the show began. Yeah, not to feel like you have to be limited by one type of expression. You know, see, that was one of my early challenges with the trumpet, is that was just one type of expression, and my heart felt that it had so much more to bring, so much more, so many different ways to say it, you know.
Yeah.
And we could think in it, let's say in a first, in terms of one of these arts, well, you think of, well, even in visual arts, you have all these colors and all these different kinds of brushes, or style of paints, or, you know, all these different kind of things. But then imagine if you just open it up and you're no longer just an artist, but you're a creator.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was the whole process that my mind went through as I was going through, because I felt restricted by having to put it in just one place. But then when I just called it Creator and thought of my creativity as one with the creativity of the universe, then, yes, everything opened up. And
right.
And my, I literally felt my heart chakra. This is no joke. This really happened. I felt my whole heart just open wide. It's like, and you can literally feel in the center of your chest, just this incredible fluttering, when you're doing something that is an expression of your inner creativity.
Mm.
You know, it just sings through you. It just, takes you over and transports you to that place of consciousness, and also shares that message with anybody who could listen. You know, this is a message that you don't argue with the music, you don't debate it in a political sense, you just listen to it, and
right.
It has its effect, you know, in a vibrational sense and even on a molecular level.
Indeed. Well, that's interesting. So in a way, you know, what you're saying is that to stop being afraid that one isn't, you know, good enough in either drawing or playing an instrument or even dancing or whatever, it's more like if you can recognize that you just can do whatever the heck you want to do without being you know, afraid what everyone else thinks or what have you, you get more in contact with the whole palette, so to speak, of all the possible ways you can express yourself, right? In order, just instead of boxing yourself in and thinking, you know, I'm going to stick to music or even this kind of music, right? Because you're limiting yourself all the time in a way.
Yeah, exactly, man. Beautifully put. I enjoyed that. That's exactly it, you know. And, you know, what happens is that outer wondering at what everybody else might think, we get doubt upon that first inclination. This is what one of the practices I started doing a lot. Whenever I first wanted to do something, you know, maybe I'm walking along and then all of a sudden I feel like I wanted to jump. But, you know, maybe a lot of the times we're like, oh, you can't do that. Oh, someone's going to think I'm a dumbass, or hey, this or that, or whatever else.
Right.
So we don't jump. We just keep our serious face on, walk eyes straight ahead, you know. But
yeah.
Now if I feel like something come through me to jump, I'll jump.
Of course.
Yeah, I've learned to not allow that doubt or that reflex to inhibit me, you know. And I guarantee you that if you open up that space and keep your eye out, you'll see that come up. Something will come up. That spirit, that is the spirit. That is, to me, the Holy Spirit or the creative energy or the the conscious living breath of the universe. And,
yes.
You know, it's not a serious thing. You know, it's not, no, it's joyous. It's playful. It's whimsical. It's intricate. It's silly. It knows how to, you know, just get you right, you know, to get your attention if it can. And it's, I know it's trying in all of our hearts all the time to get our attention, you know. And when you have a silly moment in the day, you know, that's another example. Just think of the universe capable of some of the silliness that we see. You know, there's a great sense of humor there.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you can find these little pokes or these little proddings or these little things arising in your heart and you allow them expression, that is to me, the blooming of the lotus. Imagine it like a plant. You get this little seedling. You know, the seed is just the fact that you're capable of that or that potentiality. But then when you get the little whimsical notion, that is becoming actuality and that plant begins to bloom.
Yes.
And that is also your heart chakra opening. So the more of these seeds you plant and cultivate, the more your heart will open and the more you will feel that joy arise in your heart.
Yes, and it doesn't matter what everyone else is doing or how they choose to live their life, because one thing that that struck me when you mentioned that, like let's say you're doing a jump on the street or whatever it is that you're doing, right? You know, it just also demonstrate how how limited and how scared many people are. We're kind of, you know, spiritually, you know, neutered, if you, you know, if you will. It's like, just if you go 1 centimeter or 1 millimeter, you know, outside the box of the limited norm, in a way, then people freak out. You know, it takes so little to make people look at you in a different way. You know, it's incredible if we think about it.
Oh yeah, I know, man. Just thinking of it that way, it's like, man, please jump out there. You know, please,
right.
You know, please, you know, speak up. You know, that's another thing. You know, if you say the wrong thing, supposedly, you know, the quote wrong thing, people are shocked, but the wrong things are so simple too sometimes. You know, you just express like a deeper point of view, or, you know, you can even just bring up Zen, or just like what we're talking about, to some people, and it'll freak them out. You know, that the discourse is so skewed. And I was thinking about this earlier. Why does that get so skewed? And, you know, we have some of these old habits that just keep hanging around. You know, it's just like if you discover a new technology in science, but you don't apply the technology universally, you haven't solved the problem yet.
That's right.
You know, and in the same way, you know, we have these tools and these doorways to realization all around us now, but there's no substitute for applying the technology, for using it, for doing the work.
Yes.
You know, it isn't just hand it over. You know, you have, you earn it, and in earning it, you can rightfully claim it's yours, I guess. That's how, you know, it's the experience and it's the fruits of our labors that build the spiritual reality for ourselves. It's not going to just come out of the blue. And you know, I guess in the ultimate Zen realization, I guess it can just come out of the blue. But I mean, in a daily sense, in a daily practice sense, you know, you have to be at it, just like anything else. Work at it and do it. And
you have to ask for it, right? You have to want it. You have to search for it in one sense. Because, again, if you are content with your situation and you know, nothing, you know, if you don't want that change, you're probably not going to bring it about, right? You know, you're not going to spawn it to come into existence, or that shocker. It might come, you know, obviously, as you say, it might surprise people, and that has happened before, and I guess continue to happen. But overall, you know, we have to want something different in order for it to manifest or become real, you know?
Yeah, and we don't have to see that as like an obligation or a punishment. And you see, this is where, if we are truly aware and truly creative, we should be able to apply the things that make us happy in those areas. You know, that is a matter of perseverance and, you know, kind of faith in yourself, or having that clear goal thought through and having you work towards it, you know, while also, as we were saying earlier, remaining open to something new or a divergence or something that you hadn't thought of. But if you would have never begun that journey, you would have never been able to take that divergence. If you would have just sat there in the beginning and done nothing, then nothing would happen and you'd be stuck, and then you'll feel bummed out because you're just hanging around, you know, you're not realizing your potential or making your dreams come true.
Yeah, indeed. And you know, we had this idea of the Zen eye of the hurricane, and indeed, you know, the world is like a hurricane rushing by. It's very busy. Things get more and more, you know, stressful or difficult, or as some would say, that even time, the sense of time is speeding up, and that we are, you know, we've been talking with that with some of our previous guests as well. And in that case, it's very important to that we can find that kind of the eye of the storm, if you will, a place of calmness where, you know, we can make some time to focus on ourselves and go inwardly instead of just focusing on all the problems in the world or what everyone else is doing all the time. And I at least feel it's very important to be able to have that balance to kind of go into this mode, as well as, of course, going out of that mode and still operating within the world, of course, but finding that peace or finding the eye of the storm. Very important to me. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, because if you're out there riding with the storm all the time, it's just going to wear you out. You're going to get stressed out. You're going to get sick. You're going to feel depressed. And then what are they going to do? Give you these prescription drugs or whatever? Then, you know, I don't know. It's just the health that many are missing is simply being able to unplug from the madness. You know, we don't teach enough. We don't talk about it enough. You know, and unplugging from the madness is getting some space from the mind, that the where all this stuff enters in, you know. And so that's why a universal perspective of yourself, thinking of yourself, like I say, as a riding on a ball in outer space, and I don't know what the heck's going on kind of a perspective, you know.
Yeah.
You and the truth of life being the same as it's always been, you know, in this age, in previous ages, you know, that it is, like you say, it's inward. The whole point of all the madness outside is to redirect your attention to your inner spaces, to your inner possibilities, because when you yourself go into that and change through that, when you once again look back outside, the whole dynamic is different, you know. And in the world, there's probably always going to be catastrophes going on and somebody going nuts and doing something bad and accidents and this and that. I mean, the fact of the matter is, underneath it all lies death, our own inevitable death. And the sooner you face that and deal with that and really make it your own, the sooner you can get on with doing other things.
That's we've talked about that before, and it's such a big point to life, really. Sounds like an oxymoron, of course, but death is a big part of life in that sense, to at least get over death or facing it on one level or another. And as you say, I think that the world of opportunity opens up if you are, you know, if you dare to face that reality, and when you do that, as you say, you can begin to focus on something else, of what actually is important in life, and you might even realize that there's not, you know, much time of monkeying around, so to speak, but get to the real stuff that you're interested in, and get to some of the important things that you want to do during your lifetime. You know, that's how I see it.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Because we simply do not know about tomorrow. You know, I just wrote a little piece on the website the other day, creativecosmos.org, about that, like this could happen or this could happen, you know. Well, Obama could win or McCain could win, or, you know, we could have earthquakes and volcanoes, or, you know, Earth could do the dreaded pole shift, or, you know, all hell could break loose over here, or blah, blah, blah. Well, the bottom line is the same. We've got a little bit of time here to do what we got to do, you know, for our own soul evolution, our own awareness training, you know. I say go into the world and do good work and do what you feel called to. You know, that's a dynamic too, to share this, but essentially underneath it all, I really believe that the point is that we wake up to ourselves. That's why we come back here, is for our own personal lessons. Yeah, we might have friends and relationships and things we enjoy, but really I think waking up to all the possibilities, because why would they be in there if they weren't meant to be discovered?
Right.
Why would you be able to do this even inherently if it wasn't somehow, you know, meant to come out one day, to bloom one day, to, you know, there it is to me, intrinsic to the situation, that is a big part of what we're doing here.
Indeed. And before that, you mentioned, Chris, that basically that the mind is, if you will, where the madness of the world enters in. And that, you know, implies that there is an important idea of, if you will, then at least partly disconnecting from the mind, or letting the mind rest, so to speak. And that potentially takes us into the arena of Zen, you know, the concept of Zen. And we don't necessarily have to talk about the kind of the official discipline or the official outline of Zen, but do you feel that Zen is a big part of that process to help to disconnect a little bit from the mind? Tell us a little bit about your idea or concept of Zen and why you think it's a good idea to be familiar with it.
Yeah. You know, Zen is one of those words, you know, it's just, you can say many things about it, but the Zen is like the freedom even from all of that. But the first point I'd say about that is the TV world or the world at large is always trying to convince you that you have something to do with it, that that world is part of your self-definition, that you are obligated for this and obligated for that, and you are a part of that world. So the first thing that to me Zen, or just like space, you know, I like to say space, you know, I see all that stuff on the world. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I do care about it. I am passionate about it. And I do try to do something about it every day. That's part of the whole point of Creative Cosmos website. But on another level, I just, I'm separate from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have space from it. Because I know it isn't my personal responsibility to fix everything. You
right,
know, there
right.
were times when I was first waking up that I was like, how am I going to do all this?
<You know>? Yes.
and you just get, you know, you get crazy about it if you think that it's up to you to solve everything or to
set the world
or
right.
Even, yeah. Because that's a grander evolution, you know, that's a bigger process. And it's underway, it's happening, it's going to happen. What we do, well, at least in my idea and how I try to look at it and practice it, is I do what I can to express myself, which I believe to be part of that plan, overall plan that will eventually bring the grand awakening about, or a higher consciousness for everybody. Well, we all have to, you know, each person that expresses themselves and makes that potential actual, you know, moves that ball forward a little bit, you know. So everybody who's even doing that, you know, you can think of that if you're sitting at home saying, should I write this poem? Or I've got, you know, maybe I should write something down. Forget it. You know, but just think, if you write something down and you express yourself, you're making one step for everybody.
Yes.
In consciousness.
And as you say, the importance thereof also daring to take that first step, because as you say, I think that the connection, if you will, to the muse or to the higher spiritual inspirational force, so to speak, becomes more and more clear as more and more you begin to, you know, let loose, so to speak. You know, dare to, as you say, write that poem or play that piece of music or record something, or, you know, and the more you do that, the more it's like any muscle, right? If you use the muscle more, it consequently is going to build up, it's going to get stronger, and, you know, if you will, better, you know, at what it is that you want to do, right?
Yeah, and it keeps evolving, you know, and you just start thinking in terms of possibilities, not, you know, potential pitfalls. You start seeing, wow, I could do this, or hey, I got this new thing. And it's, you know, it's not a static thing. It does. The more you do it, the more it compounds on itself. You know, think of it first like, okay, first you're going to make one little drawing. Okay, now you're going to play a couple notes on a xylophone, and then you do this, and then you do this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and then, yeah, pretty soon it turns into a flow.
Yes.
And that's the energy that then doesn't just express these specific artifacts, but it actually invigorates your whole energy system. Your aura becomes brighter. You know, as I say, this will go right in and open your chakras up, because you're one, getting out the blocks, and two, letting in the light. So it serves both purposes. That's why it's such a good method, you know. I mean, the other methods to dealing with some of this that can be helpful sometimes too, like if you're really, you know, you have a lot of hurt about something, you know, that's why a certain amount of catharsis is good. You know, you could do some screaming, you could do some crying, you could do some banging on the pillow, you know. I mean, I recommend trying to keep it safe, you know. You don't have to bang your head against the wall to express your emotion. Just set up a safe place.
A good idea.
Just go somewhere. I mean, simply, where people aren't going to think something weird's going on, you know. Sometimes in your car, you're driving around. That's usually a pretty good place. You could just let out huge scream, you know.
Right.
I do that sometimes. Like, if I'm by myself, nobody else can hear it. They might look over and see that my mouth is open or something.
Right.
But so what, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Who knows? You know, rather than you being embarrassed, maybe you'll get somebody else over there to scream, you know, or get somebody else to hopefully not scream at you, but just to participate in expressing. Just watch, you know, it's contagious. Once you start getting out of those bounds, you know, everybody inside knows it, or everybody wants things to be loosened up. We just have kind of painted ourselves into a corner here. So we've got to find interesting ways to step out of it.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think that would actually, like, for the benefit of everyone and for the health of you know, civilization, if you will, doing stuff like that, actually, I think is very, it's a very good way to keep things, you know, sane, if you will, because I think there's too much suppressed emotion out there. And I think that is, you know, what actually creates the, you know, many of the people that actually do freak out and eventually goes berserk because they haven't had enough of you know, releasing some of the pressure from the steam vent once in a while, you know, and a good hearty scream now and then can be very, very healthy, I think, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I always say, like, well, it's just like in music, to play well in the middle ranges, you have to practice the extremes. You know, to be a good human being, you've got to cry your eyes out once in a while. You've got to laugh till you can't laugh anymore. You know, you've got to just get riled up if you need to get riled up. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, but you got to get it moving. You got to get it moving.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. And also, you know, one point that you mentioned was the idea that, you know, at the initial steps, if you will, of an awakening process, so to speak, when one realizes that there's much more going on in the world, when one discovers what have you, you know, the fantastic world of you know, conspiracies that is going on, and one taps into some of the information streams that are available online, you know, or what have you, one often gets, I think, the idea that, you know, it's okay, it's now up to me to save the world, it's now up to me to bring everyone this information and to help everyone to learn this stuff, similar what I have learned or what have you. And I think that's a kind of a very standard set of responses to the information, if you will. One takes the weight of the world on you know, one's own shoulders and feel responsible for it all. But that could be very heavy, you know. That could crush you, basically. And that's not good as well, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, like you said, that's probably a natural response to realizing all this. And it's, you know, yeah, you probably feel like you want to do something, and you probably will do something, you know, but I think it evolves, the whole concept evolves, or the whole thing, you know, when you see that, well, you can do what you can do, you know, and it's probably good that one of us can't just change everything, because we might have, like, complete chaos, you know, if we just all could just stop the world and just exactly change it to our will. Nah, I'm glad that it takes a decent amount of effort to get things to manifest and you know, then you inject it kind of into the human paradigm. You know, that's what I think when I'm creating my stuff. I'm trying to send it out there, and I'm just hoping that, you know, some of that good stuff that I come up with is just going to go in there and be part of all of us, you know, eventually.
Yeah.
You know, just be in there as part of the human experience, you know, somebody who cared and loved and shared and tried to do good, you know, yeah. Simple things like that, you know. You just put it out there, and that's really our responsibility, is to find our talents, to see where they apply, and then to make that link to the world.
Mm. You know, and
go ahead. Yeah.
No, I just wanted to mention that, you know, as you say, we should, you know, in that regard, do all we can. And obviously this is about, you know, helping the information to flow, help to inform people. And obviously all of this always, in most cases, come from a position of love, you know, a love of the people around you, or even society, or a nation, or even the earth, you know, to help to heal this planet, which obviously in many regards at least is sick, or at least the human world, you know, that we're in a lot of trouble right now, you know. But what is worth saying is that there are many levels of helping along, you know, the awakening process, so to speak, and in many cases working on yourself, and consequently creating that little feel or aura around yourself can be as beneficial as going out and screaming, you know, at the streets and waving those placards and help to bring in reform, you know, in one way. It's just a different perspective and approach to the same goal in one way.
Well, yeah, immediately makes me think, you know, you said it's a love, you're radiating love. Well, you're essentially bringing the heart into the society, which then that is what loosens the hold of the mind. You know, the mind without heart, it can often start becoming destructive and judgmental and angry and, you know, really focused in on itself. But with the heart, well, then we illuminate the heart through the mind and use the mind to express what we find in the heart. And the mind is not dictating terms to us. And so we go out and we have that kind of approach, and doing something creative or doing what we're meant to be doing is what opens this energy up. And you go into the world and you radiate that light, you will affect others. You know, you don't even have to say anything.
Yeah.
You know, at first in this whole thing, I used to kind of bring it up or talk to people about it. But now I just go out and I don't even say anything until somebody says something to me. Yeah. And, you know, people do say something to you about it, you know. And I've had other friends that were like that, too. They're just such great guys that people just say, hey, what's up with you, or what's your deal all about? And, you know, and they just then, you know, the people will be receptive because they're asking. Their curiosity is leading the way, you know, and you don't have to try to convince anybody of anything, you know. So it's those receptive moments as well that are really, really help facilitate the transmission of that energy, you know.
Yes, and also, of course, you know, speech is just one form of communication. So I think that human beings are communicating on so many levels all the time. Eye contact, body language, meaning that you can, and people pick up on this stuff on a more kind of etheric level, if you will, that, you know, they can sense of you that you have something to say, something more, or that you know, if they care to engage you, that there's going to be something more than beyond the normal, perhaps, responses that you would get from a person that isn't so spiritually aware that you are, you know. So I think there are communication going on many different levels here.
Yeah, good point, because, you know, that leads us right into considering the present moment. You know, we're talking the Zen Eye of the Hurricane. Well, that's where you stop.
Hmm.
That's where you're in the moment, and being in the moment and not having your energy out there. You know, you don't have a part of yourself lost with the TV or thinking about this or thinking about that. When you're present, when you're there, then what you said maybe for some people happens on an ethereal level. Well, that becomes conscious. You see all that stuff. You know, you can see where people are coming from. Mm-hmm. You can see all sorts of things in their energy fields. You know, I've seen angels, I've seen demons, I've seen nymphs and fauns and animals of all types flashing in and out of people's auras. And, you know, maybe some of you out there, the psychically adept, you get flashes like that sometimes where you'll see somebody and all of a sudden you'll be like, dang, they're you see horns on their head or something crazy like that, but
yeah,
that present, pulling that energy back of yours that's out there mixed up with everything else, whether it's a conflict with somebody or, whether it's a past hurt or, whether you just have a part of your mind that's really tied up in some specific judgment or belief, all these things take energy away and therefore leave us less conscious in the moment. So the more we can get space, and this is, to me, the heart of Zen and my number one practice is just to reflect everything. Just as I'm a mirror.
Yes.
It just happens. Everything happens. And, it could be catastrophe or it could be whatever, but I still, there in that place, at the very root of it all, I just see it. Sure, so, on other level. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, I just want to say, so it's more about reflect than instead of react?
Yeah, exactly, because reflect disengages react, whether it's a thought, whether it's a feeling, because all those things are tied to our individualized specific human body at this time self. Those are things cultivated in that persona. But to see things as universe or, you got to be completely neutral. You just see it. Yeah. You're aware. It all happens. All of it. The good, the bad, the terrible, the intense, everything. It happens. So when you see it, when you see things, you're not surprised by it. You don't react. You don't judge. You don't interpret. You don't think about. You just see it.
Yeah.
And that is the Zen eye of the hurricane.
And, exactly. It's a very good point, and it's more of you're becoming an observer of things instead of just a one who is engaged and are kind of emotionally responsive to all the things that are going on. Obviously, some people would suggest that's cold, and in a way they're right, because this person is more cool, right? They're more focused on themselves. They're not hot, as it were. They're not emotionally engaged in the same way. And I think things would be more balanced, and I think people would have a better perspective on things if they could learn to apply this technique, so to speak, on themselves a little bit more, just as you say, Chris, instead of just running around and panicking about all the things that are going on in the world, having a more cool approach to it and very consciously just observe it and let it flow. And, and that, I think, would open you up or allow yourself to deal with these things also in a more, rational and sensible way. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah, it'll help you relax too, and it's about slowing things down. Removing artificial pressures, like where you set for yourself, I got to get this done by 3, and then you sit and worry about it all day until 3 o'clock. All these things that we perceive as maybe just part of the way things are. Well, we can start weeding out some of these artificial superstructures we imposed on ourselves if we realize, well, things can wait. Everything doesn't have to be in a rush. If you were sick with a terminal illness, what's the first thing you would do? You'd slow things down. You'd start appreciating things. You'd be with your friends and fam. Well, hey, essentially we have a terminal illness. We're going to die. it's just a matter of time. Being here is you're terminal, so have that perspective now. Slow things down now, get the flow happening now, and you will have those blessings come into your life. It will mean more. And in that meaning, you will create more for yourself and for those around you than you ever would have in the old life of pressure, because you'll be coming from a better place, a healthier, happier place, so that what you contribute will also be of that sort.
Mm. Wonderful. Very nice put. And again, we're back to the idea of daring to face death in a way. And it's, again, you just pointed out, again, why it's such a key part of life, as it were. And you know, one thing that I did was just briefly check up on, I did this very basic search for Zen, and find, of course, the Enso, the symbol of Zen. And what I found interesting, of course, is that looks very much like, some would say, an Ouroboros, the snake that is eating its own tail, but also like very much like an eye in the hurricane, actually. You know, and these things have ways of applying themselves on a micro and you know, macro level, you know. And I found it just interesting because another thing, of course, as well, is that we talked about before. If you watch someone that is in, within meditation, Zen meditation, in many cases they hold their hands to make the to form an egg, you know, a special. You can look at pictures on this online, and to me that very much kind of represented that one is in, if you will, kind of control of one's ego, but also that it's smaller than you, meaning that you actually the ego is small enough so you can hold it in your hand, and it's like you're setting the ego away from yourself while you're in this moment of meditation, Zen meditation. Just found it interesting. Any comments, Chris?
Yeah, that's a great way to indicate that space, you know, because that ego is also the mind and everything contained in the mind. And yeah, it's like a state of repose. It's a state of being at rest. You know, that's one thing, you know, I've found that I resonate with cats very well. Mm-hmm. I've tried to get pets, like I've tried to get dogs before, and then they always like chew up my phone or pee on my music or something, and they kind of drive me nuts with all their yappity yapping and stuff like that. And I've tried to get birds, but they then like bite my finger and poop all over the house and stuff like that. But I've gotten cats, and I get along extremely well with cats, and I have two cats that I've had for about 10 years now. Mm. Maybe they've rubbed off on me a little bit, but I kind of look at that as a cat-like thing, to remain relaxed, but that doesn't mean your awareness isn't sharp.
Right, exactly.
You're still really that, you're there, you know, it's just that state of reflection, it's just presence, you're just there.
Mm.
You know, where you say, if you can sometimes see in other people, if they're coming from a certain place in their mind, yeah, I recognize that. This person's got, you know, has got anger issues. Or, yeah, this person's, you know, mom, like, smothered them. Or this person's got smacked around by somebody. Or, you know, I don't know. You can just kind of see these things in the mind that come out, present themselves sometimes. But the state of being a watcher, there's not going to be anything there. So the people that you can't get a fix on a lot of the times are the people whose energy is enough that it's not in these fixed mental angles. There, it's a free flow. It's a vibrant coursing of energy, and it's just a look that sees.
Mm, very nice. One thing that I wanted to talk to you about as well, Chris, is the idea of, I guess we could say the West meets the East. You've had kind of a little bit, I guess, of a slogan on your website, creativecosmos.org, that talks about the, you know, integration, or at least kind of the communication between the West and East. And I, you know, just want to hear from your kind of perspective, if you think that this is something that we see in the world today. We can look at this either from a kind of a, you know, a geopolitical level, but we can also look at it on a spiritual level, of course. Some people would say, you know, we can look at economics and see how things are balancing themselves out in one way, from one perspective, between the East and the West. Any ideas about that, Chris? Have you kind of thought about that as since you've been kind of close with that concept of the integration between the West and the East?
Well, yeah, I mean, one thing about the East is that they have a, like we've been saying, a slower concept of time. you know, where the West, particularly America, is such a new phenomenon, and it's always hyped up all the time. And the East might be, you know, nice and even and nice and slow. And I think that people from the East have come to the West specifically to try to help essentially mellow the West out. You know, get them to chill out a little bit, and that you don't have to be constantly occupied. Or, you know, that's one thing of the economy. One part of the basic economic capitalism thing that is happening in America now is you've got to always be just like striving to make more money. You know, yeah. and the fact that to get something, they loan you the money, put you in the debt. And then you've got to work to pay off that debt, and then you can start trying to get ahead. But meanwhile, everything you try to buy, there's debt.
Yeah.
You know, and this is like, doesn't necessarily make, you know, what's happening now is this stuff has just gotten crazy. The interest rates on everything, you know, if you're paying 29.99% on a credit card, you're pretty much doomed. There's just no way you can catch up with it. You know, $100 could turn into $1,000, and with late fees, $5, $10, and people just give up, and these things go insane. You know, and
yeah.
In the old world, usury was one of the greatest crimes. Charging loan people money and charging them high interest rate was considered a very bad crime, like a crime against humanity.
Exactly.
We talk about that word, that term, in other sense, crimes against humanity. But think about that infliction of loaning you money at high interest rates. For many, you know, probably thousands of years, was considered a crime against humanity.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something that they've managed to introduce. And as you say, and also on a kind of micro and macrocosm level, these things are always interesting, even from a mythological perspective, actually. If we look at the West, that has, I think, from the perspective of Egypt, West has been looked upon as the area of death, actually, you know, an area, the kingdom of the dead, basically, reigns in the West, you know, and the East, of course, with the sun rising in the East, right? It more represents spring and the beginnings of life, or where life comes from in one way. I personally have always kind of seen, look at it as the West represents the masculine in a way, and the East is the feminine, or even as the right brain and the left brain, the hemispheres, on a global level, of course, on a planetary level, of course, and potentially again, then we could see hopefully some kind of balancing out of these forces. Maybe on one level we can begin to use both brain halves in unison, or both the parts of the West and the East in unison, and that would help to bring a better and more stable picture to the world. Ideas about that, Chris?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're also talking head and heart, or science and religion,
yes.
Kind of. You know, the West has been the leader in science for, you know, many years now, and the East brings this ancient tradition of, you know, esoteric true spirituality. You know, the West, as their standard religion, Christianity, is right now, they cut out many things, you know, many types of these broader experiences. You know, different versions of them do it different ways, but, you know, we don't need to have just one way. And anybody who starts talking exclusiveness with me, well, this is the only way, everybody else is wrong. Well, you've lost me already.
You know? Yeah.
You lost me on, what do you mean? I don't get it, you know, that kind of a thing. But yeah, you know, I think that's maybe the alchemy that we are trying to tap dance through right now, as the bridging of those worlds. And, you know, that happens inside of us. That is the Zen circle you were talking about. When we as individuals bridge that world inside of ourselves, you know, when we can use the scientific mind while also having a basis of heart and understanding there with it. So we don't use it to inflict violence, but we use it creatively to manifest positive things. And you know, this, we have to cultivate this friendly approach to each other, because of so much of our resources. I mean, things would be just fine. I mean, really, also this economic business. Well, it's a result of the wars.
Yeah, duh. Of course.
You know, yeah, the wars. I mean, all this money being poured into, you know, harming others or, you know, inflicting insane amounts of damage. You know, it's justified 1,000 different ways, but maybe this economic, I don't know, disaster is directly tied to that. You know, the other side of that. How long can you spend billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars, you know, just funding a war so far away? And when, I mean, when does it all give out? When do the individuals involved, the troops there, you know, I'm sure they're not all thrilled to be there, and I bet many of them feel like they're trapped there. And that's, you know, we hear of suicides over there and stuff because it's probably a hell they can't feel they can get away from any other way, because the deal was changed on them, you know, the callbacks, second time, third time, fourth time. You know, I mean, of course they're going to get exhausted and worn out, and I mean, it's all going to get worn out. You just can't keep, I mean, isn't this exactly what the Roman Empire did, overextending themselves and all these crazy long reach wars, and then they eventually kind of caved in on the inside?
Yeah.
But we don't have to do that. It doesn't have to be that way. And however bad it seems, we can pull it back and we can make it right. It's amazing how if you started taking a different approach and applying positive solutions and working for each other, how fast we could move on some of these things.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. And the idea of also, I guess, false values, you know, all the money system overall, it's very much like a, you know, it's like a game. People are, you know, in that regard, playing with money or with the different values of things, and it's in many cases, you know, unethical. We could go on the jive that Ian Lungold and even Carl Johan Kellerman would talk about, I guess, also to kind of add to this perspective that this very unbalanced way of handling the economy, handling the way the wars are being fought, you know, or war overall, you know, that this is the economy is excuse me, a little bit of a representation. Of, you know, I don't know what to call it. Maybe the, you know, the force of the world, where the flow of the energy needs to be at that particular point. So a little bit what is happening is that the rug is being, you know, drawn from under the feet of America a little bit like that. You know, it's like, okay, wait a minute here. You know, are we on the right track here? Do we need to think twice about this? You know. And it can be obviously be very unstable for a short period. But as you say, Chris, I think it's worth pointing that out, that it's not necessary for, you know, the U.S. or America to you know, go under because of this, you know, or crash or have a much heavier, you know, crash than what already has occurred. And things can turn around, I think. I definitely feel that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's where, again, we have to unplug from the media fear-mongering machine that's trying to make it seem like the sky is falling. You know, we just have to see it for what it is and then do something about it. You know, especially, you know, there's people, you know, spiritual people or people awakening up in all these different fields too. You know, if you're closer to the situation, this might be a time for you to come out and present a strong alternative. You know, people who really, you know, lawyers or, you know, business people or other people, you know, they can be leading advocates for a positive change. You know, exchanging money doesn't have to mean we rip each other off. It can just be, as it was in the beginning, a handy tool for exchanging goods. You know, it could be money, could be anything.
Sure.
You know, because of course it isn't real in the first place.
Exactly.
It's just, we all just collectively believe in it because that's essentially what we're told to do from the beginning. It's just there. It's always there. Just like the church is always there. It's always been there. You know, kind of a thing. It's just in the background, but it's part of what then has a long-term impact on shaping our way of looking at things. Mm. You know, that's a good thing about the reflective state as well, is it helps you disconnect from not just overt mind control, but subtle manipulation, you know, long-term controls that maybe initially you never even noticed because it's been there since the day you were born, just as part of the backdrop of the world.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to be able to, as you said before, Chris, to kind of really zoom out, you know, way, way far back and get the whole perspective on things so you can actually observe yourself and look at yourself from another perspective and see, you know, am I being, you know, controlled here by different forces? Am I really in my own center? Am I true to myself? Am I the one who I'm really supposed to be, you know, and get that perspective? And when you do that, I think there will be more difficult for the control freaks to add their manipulation, if you will, upon you, the mind control or the indoctrination or the, you know, levels of schooling, you know, what have you.
Yeah, because it's your reaction that makes you have something to do with it, is what gives you, you're like, in your reacting, you hand over control. You give them a part of your energy. So I liked what you said earlier. It's not cold position. It's a cool position.
Yeah.
It's a relaxed position. It's a state of rest. And if you look at everything with that eye, and, you know, nothing is going to find its way in that's going to corrupt your energy field. You know, you can see it and see whether you want to accept it or not, because you have enough space inside of yourself that's just your space, that inner sanctuary. Or, you know, that's why it's important to do sometimes the sitting meditation. You know, it's hard to do. You know, I know why people don't do it, because as soon as they sit, they get pulled out and want to do something else. Well, yeah. I'm bored. I'm going to turn on the TV, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to, you know, I mean, if you sit down there and you just sit, you know, you're going to see that in no time, you're going to start getting fidgety, or you're going to want this or want that. But if you kind of break through that and just say, okay, I'm going to sit 20 minutes no matter what I feel like, you know, that helps start, one, showing you what's going on, and two, getting you that and space from it.
Yeah.
You know, because in seeing it, how can you see it if it's out, you know, you can only see if it's outside of you somehow. You've got that, seeing it gives you that space. It's out there, you know, and getting everything in its proper place out there, then that calm, that's what, why they say silence in Zen. That's why they say stillness is the way. And that's why they talk of a peace which passeth understanding, because it's just at rest. Mm. It's calm.
Hmm. I want to touch upon two different points, Chris, before we begin to round things up here. One is if you have any tips, basically, on, you know, if there's any great or good kind of Zen philosopher, if you will, out there to recommend, either if we talk about for reading or for, you know, video lectures that are available online that people can kind of search for and continue a little bit of the exploration for themselves. Any recommendations or tips?
Well, yeah, I've got a couple recommendations. I liked Osho's take on it. Osho helped me see many angles of it, and that was my big introduction to it in a way. But I also read all the traditional Zen books, you know. Teach Nhat Hanh books are excellent. They're complete, you know, a very different approach, but it's good to get many different approaches of it so you don't think there's one approach to it. I mean, that's the whole point. There isn't an approach. It's Zen.
Right.
You know, but these people are good at indicating that, or giving you, reminding you of that, but also giving you practices or slowing things down, or just giving you little triggers that will help you have these little breakthrough moments where you'll be free of the mind and you'll feel this energy pouring in and you'll start expanding, and then you'll be like, wow, you know, you'll start seeing the present moment. You know, I know many of you are already having some of these experiences. So I liked Osho, and I like Teach Nhat Hanh, and I like to go back to the old school Zen masters. Whenever I see Zen master this guy, Zen master that guy, I love to read all those different books, because it's just, again, many different ways to indicate the Zen experience. And it kind of roots you in the tradition if you read the old school Zen masters. You know, you take a modern approach with it, but then the tradition, I think the backstory is a big part of it too, you know. Why would the old school master jump and shake the other student until the student finally awoke? Or, you know, they'll give you some crazy Zen koan to ponder upon. And hey, I think it's good to do all these different things, you know, to just try them out, check them out. You know, of course, to me, Tao and Zen are not different, really. I mean, they're different, slightly different connotations, but I see them essentially as being one. And so I like, of course, Lao Tzu and Chuang Tzu and some of the Taoist masters. And, you know, I say read all the traditions and all the New Age books and everything you can get your hands on. Just keep space from it all.
Yeah.
Just allow it all to fill in parts of the picture that you resonate with. Put together your own synergy. You know, you let these different things be guides for you in your own experience. You know, always remember that it's really about you and your experience, and these books and these teachers and these creations are tools, are experiments. It's an ongoing experiment that we're all a part of called life.
Indeed. And the last point also I wanted to talk with you about, Chris, is the your book, of course, Ruminations of the Universe. Chris, we haven't mentioned that before, I think, on the show. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was finished up nicely a few months ago. And my writing is just like what I've been saying. I try to open up and allow, you know, being a trumpet player, and then I, you know, play jazz and I play like bebop sometimes. And I say that my writing is almost like bebop. You know, I write these musical phrases. I try to use language in a crafty and creative way, and it's my contribution to the kind of, you know, I talk about some of the things like we talked about today, and many different ways of unraveling the mind and finding these spaces and what you might find once the process is underway, and, you know, just everything you can imagine, auras and chakras and past lives and third eye realizations and dreams and different aspects of the occult or pure meditation or art, creativity. I cover a wide range of things because I just want to share my experience and allow it for you to just simply be exposed to in case something in it speaks to you. But I'm very happy with it, and the word is from people who've read it so far that they've enjoyed it a lot, and it's helped trigger some experiences and been a facilitator, and they've enjoyed it. So I'm happy to recommend picking up a copy of Ruminations of the Universe.
Excellent. And of course you have other books and CDs, of course, available. And I guess, you know, to get a copy of either your book or some of your CDs, the easiest way is to go to your website, right? You have a shop set up there or something?
Yeah, go to my website, and some of the links are right on the front page, like to the books, Pearly Gates Press as well, my first big book there. And also, yeah, go to the gift shop, check it out. See, I have some of my art prints on there, some of the uplifting spiritual artistic prints, and you can see some of what my creative expression was as I took my steps into the unknown. And yeah, there's a wide variety of things. There's music and t-shirts and some fun stuff. So yeah, check out the gift shop.
Brilliant. The website again, of course, is creativecosmos.org, and Chris has a lot of excellent articles up there for you to go into and dive further into. I mean, I've always kind of liked the way that you can, you know, if you will, kind of explain sometimes very kind of difficult concept, spiritual concept, in a very easy way, down to earth, and then kind of leave you with examples that makes at least to me then a whole lot of sense. So I definitely encourage you to head on over to Chris' website again. That's creativecosmos.org. Check out some of the articles, take a look and around in the shop, and check out some of the book titles and CDs that Chris has up there for you. Chris, we got to have you back on the program sooner than we had last time, okay? We need to have you back here in a month or two and do this again, okay?
Let's do it. Yeah, we're still young lads out here, just getting warmed up. We're a lot more to go. So
absolutely, you're definitely right. Thank you. Thank you very much again, Chris, for coming on. Take good care, and we'll talk later, okay?
Thank you.
That concludes our program with Christopher Moores. As always, thank you very much for listening. It's great having you with us. My thanks to producer Fredrik Palmgren. Don't forget Red Eyes Live. Video and audio feeds. Our guest is Daniel Tatman. On Sunday the 28th, that's this coming Sunday at 7 p.m. GMT. Don't miss it. Take good care. We'll see you soon.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow, they're like much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.